This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Hello, listeners. If you're hearing this, I'm going to assume you're at least interested in money and understanding the economy and finances. And some of us want our kids to have that knowledge, too. Check out Million Bazillion, Marketplace's award-winning kids podcast that breaks down money to help dollars make more sense. A whole new season is out now. Million Bazillion is presented in partnership with Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Greenlight helps kids and teens learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. You can learn more at greenlight.com/million. And tune in to Million Bazillion wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
Why it's especially expensive to travel this Memorial Day holiday, and a look at the state of the nation's background check system as the president promises action on gun violence. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In D.C., I'm Kimberly Adams in for Kai Rizdal. It's Monday, Memorial Day, the 30th of May. Good to have you along. Memorial Day is considered the unofficial kickoff of the summer driving season, and this season is already proving to be one of the most expensive on record. Russia's invasion of Ukraine helped drive oil prices to new heights, and last week our own Andy Euler told you about how some U.S. refineries closed for good after prices hit rock bottom during the pandemic. The EU has started a two-day meeting to talk about a sixth package of sanctions, and on the agenda, Russian oil, which helped push Brent crude above $120 a barrel today, the highest in 2 months. Marketplace's Lily Jamali has more.
If you're listening to this story in your car right now, you know firsthand the sticker shock so many Americans are feeling at the gas pump. Clark Williams Derry is an energy analyst with the Institute for Energy Economics and Financial Analysis.
In the U.S., we're facing the highest prices, you know, at least in nominal terms, that we've seen ever.
He says the oil market fundamentally changed after demand tanked in the early days of the pandemic, crushing investment. Now that demand is back with a vengeance following the Russian invasion,
the market isn't there to supply it.
The Biden administration has been reaching out to industry to bring idled refineries back online, according to Bloomberg. The White House didn't respond to Marketplace's requests for comment. Annette Smith, senior analyst at Rystad Energy, says if the reports are true,
that would help immensely when you increase the number of capacities being brought back online on a global scale.
Anything to boost supply. Since prices bottomed 2 years ago, some refinery owners have tried and in some cases failed to sell their operations. And
there are quite a few refineries that are being repurposed,
refocusing their operations on biofuels, which has helped put more pressure on capacity, according to Bob McNally, president of Rapidan Energy Group. Against that backdrop, he's not convinced that pleading with industry will work.
It has to convince the industry that there's a long-term role for these units, not just for a year or two, but for 10 or 15 years.
And amid a push to decarbonize, he says that's a hard case to make. I'm Lily Jamali for Marketplace.
Wall Street is closed today for the holiday, but we'll have travel details when we do the numbers. President Biden is back in the White House today after spending about 7 hours on Sunday with families still reeling from the horror of the mass shooting in Uvalde, Texas. Biden has taken executive actions on guns in the past, but told reporters today that without Congress, quote, I can't outlaw a weapon. I can't change a background check. Let's talk about the background check part of that. Dr. Cassandra Cafossi is the deputy director of the Center for Gun Violence Prevention and Policy at Johns Hopkins University. And she says the existing federal background check system has a lot of room for improvement.
There can be delays in reporting information. There isn't a really clear set of guidelines as to how quickly this information needs to be reported in the National Instant Criminal Background Check System, or NICS. And there are gaps in the information that is recorded. For a very long time, we struggled getting mental health records into the NICS system because there was a misperception that this would violate HIPAA in some way. I think it's really important for people to understand when a firearm seller gets a flag that someone is denied a purchase, it doesn't give any reason why. All it says is denied.
When you talk about mental health being included in this, what are we exactly talking about? Like if you're taking medications for depression or anxiety, does that get you blocked from buying a gun?
The federal law related to mental health says that it's unfortunately outdated language that someone cannot purchase or possess a firearm if they are adjudicated mentally defective. What that translates into is an involuntary commitment. We have a lot of people in the U.S. who have mental health issues, even diagnosable mental illnesses, but that does not necessitate a prohibition on firearm ownership.
I understand there is also a problem known as the default proceed loophole. What is that?
When you walk into a gun seller and you submit your information for a background check, one of three things happens. Either you're alerted that the sale can immediately proceed, it might be immediately denied, or more information is needed, more time is needed to check the records. Under federal law, the FBI has 3 days to complete that check. Otherwise, the default is to proceed with the sale. And then if the information comes back that that person is prohibited, law enforcement has to go and take a gun away from someone who never should have had it in the first place. The Charleston church shooter, for example, was prohibited. He obtained his firearm because of a default proceed loophole. His records were not identified within that 3-day period. And so we're seeing really tragic incidents happening because of these default proceeds. And I think this is something that we can get people to come together on and try to close this loophole.
In the private sector, there have been a ton of advances when it comes to background checks for things like jobs. Are there any lessons or technology that could transfer here?
For many jobs that require a background check, that background check is facilitated by a fingerprint. That helps us ensure that we are properly identifying and screening out people who may be prohibited from gun ownership or who otherwise might have a criminal history that would make them not fit for the job that they're applying to. And so many occupational licensure programs actually require that fingerprint-based screening. There was a report that came out of, I believe it was Florida, several years ago that showed name, date of birth, and other demographic factor background checks on their own missed between 10 and 12% of criminal background information or prohibiting conditions. Using fingerprints is a really important advancement that we could do to improve our background check system.
In search for some kind of solution to gun violence in this country, how much attention or legislation is focused on improving the technology or the methods that go into background checks?
There have been legislative efforts to address gaps in the National Instant Criminal Background Check System. So for example, in 2018, the Fixed NICS Act was passed, which provided both incentives and some potential punitive measures if states did not improve their reporting. And from 2015 through 2020, we saw substantial improvements in both the number and quality and kind of records that were being reported by states into the NICS system. I think a target of opportunity moving forward would be to address that default proceed loophole. I think this is a policy decision that really undermines our background check system and our efforts to compile good data by giving people firearms in the absence of complete information.
Dr. Cassandra Cafasi is a professor and deputy director of the Center for Gun Violence Prevention and Policy at Johns Hopkins University. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
So because of today's holiday to honor those who've died while serving in the military, we don't have any big government data releases. But we did on Friday when the Commerce Department released some key inflation numbers. The Personal Consumption Expenditures Index was up 6.3% from April of last year. That means lots of Memorial Day staples are more expensive. But that hasn't kept people from buying them. From a barbecue in Brooklyn, Marketplace's Stephanie Hughes has more.
There was a celebratory vibe this weekend in Fort Greene Park in Brooklyn. Lots of people were gathered to barbecue. One group had a DJ, another balloons. Adonis Reef and his girlfriend Mahogany Stevens were at their own picnic table, grilling jerk chicken and a T-bone steak.
That's a steak. Look at that steak.
And that's a recession steak. Just saying. That's a steak that, you know, hard to come by.
Stevens calls it a recession steak because it cost her so much that it feels like we're in a recession, even though it's technically not one. Beef prices are up more than 16% from last year, according to the PCE price index. Other barbecue necessities like propane and festive t-shirts have gone up too. But Stevens was keeping it in perspective.
Even though everything is highly expensive, it definitely is, but can't go wrong. I got it. That's all that matters, you know?
Stevens, who's 26, actually has a job as a caretaker of the park. Reef is 30 and works in a grocery store. Both of them watch prices closely, but it's been a long pandemic, and they were ready to enjoy themselves.
You know, if we have extra and we can sit there and spend on that, why not?
Lots of Americans share that attitude, says Robert Frick, a corporate economist with the Navy Federal Credit Union.
There's so much pent-up demand. People are saying, all right, at least for this summer, we're going to travel, we're going to have fun, we're going to be with friends.
Consumer spending was up nearly 1% in April from the month before. Back at Fort Greene Park, another picnic goer, Megan Harris, was philosophical about the state of the economy.
It is what it is, then. When it's all over, we all can have a little more money in our pockets, I guess. I mean, what else can you do?
And with no one certain how long high inflation will last, that question, what else can you do, is front and center for many politicians, businesses, and consumers. In New York, I'm Stephanie Hughes for Marketplace.
With all those consumers willing and ready to spend, are retailers, especially small retailers, feeling that demand? We checked back in with one of our regulars, Irene Kesselman, who runs Alley Cat Toys in Carrboro, North Carolina. She sent us this dispatch just before the holiday weekend.
We had a great Easter, and now we are starting to sell some of our pool toys and outdoor toys. I have a lot of inventory right now. And a lot of that is due to the fact that from the very beginning of the year, I started seeing price increases and vendors were giving us dates as to when we had to, you know, book orders. The other factor is that because we're still dealing with overseas production issues, I and my staff are seeing things that I wrote in January just come through our doors now. I just had a back order today that had a lot of bunnies and lambs. That was intended for Easter, and now it's over, so I'm kind of stuck with that. My manager and I will be going to Atlanta Market in July, and we will be buying for the Christmas season. That's something that we will be looking forward to, and I am looking forward to personally taking a little bit of time for myself. I am going to the mountains this weekend and very appreciative of that.
Hope you enjoyed your time in the mountains. That was Irene Kesselman running Alley Cat Toys in Carrboro, North Carolina. coming up.
It's one of the most important positions in the American theater that she's got.
Representation matters. First, though, let's do the numbers. The markets are closed today for the Memorial Day holiday. Airports are, of course, open, but with lots of flight cancellations. More than 1,600 yesterday, according to FlightAware, and about a third of those flights were flying within, into, or out of the U.S. Latest figures from the Transportation Security Administration show 4,090,617 people passed through airport checkpoints this past weekend. Over the same weekend last year, that was 3,256,264 people. You're listening to Marketplace. This is Marketplace. I'm Kimberly Adams. If you did any spring cleaning, or still plan to, you're probably going to find some old cables and chargers, maybe an old phone or laptop. One study estimated that the world's mountain of electronic waste in 2021 alone weighed 57 million tons. But there's value in that hardware, if you know where to look, and crucially, how to get it out. The BBC's Ivana Davidovich has been tracking down some urban miners at work.
In my quest to find out more about how we can extract wealth from waste, I travel to Antwerp in Belgium. I've come to meet Thierry van Kerkhoven from Umicore, once a traditional smelting company, which became an urban mining pioneer specializing in precious metals. It sources electronic waste from all over the world.
So what we are doing here is that, first of all, we are shredding the circuit boards to something like 12 centimeters particle size.
Working through a ton of circuit board material yields some promising results.
On average, in one ton of circuit board material, you will have something like 600 to 800 grams of silver, between 100 and 150 grams of gold, and you may have something like 30 to 40 or 50 grams of palladium.
They also extract valuable and scarce metals like rhodium and palladium, and both are important in getting your car on the road.
If you look at rhodium, about 80%, if not more, of the rhodium is used in one application, the production of new car catalysts. If you look at palladium, also there, the share of the car industry is dominant.
But urban mining isn't just about electronics. It's also about exploiting the potential of the built environment as a source of raw materials. On the other side of the world, in Sydney, Australia, professor and inventor Veena Sahajwala is well known in the media there as the Waste Queen. And it's a title she doesn't mind one bit.
I have no idea how it happened, but I have to say Waste Queen sounds pretty awesome.
Veena's greatest invention is so-called green steel, where hydrogen is extracted from discarded rubber tires to replace coal in steel production.
This green steel technology of ours is called polymer injection technology. So the polymer, of course, in this case is rubber tires. We're injecting that into electric arc furnaces, which typically would have relied on different types of, you know, coal and coke to provide the kinds of input materials that the steelmaking furnace needs.
And this breakthrough has been patented around the world. Plus, it's diverted millions of old tires from landfill. To put that in context, steelmaking generates around 8% of global CO2 emissions. The need for firms in Europe to decarbonize is also being driven by the EU. Jessica Richter researches the circular economy, particularly around electronics, at Sweden's Lund University. She says that the new rules on the volume of recycled material in EV batteries will speed up the need to source raw materials outside of conventional mining.
Manufacturers of the batteries themselves have to go and find this recycled material. So they're going to be looking for who has recycled cobalt, who has recycled nickel, who has recycled lithium out there. So it is driving a demand in this market.
What enables urban mining is well-sorted waste streams and persuading people to part with their used electronics. Pascal Leroy is the Director General of We Forum, a global association that researches and advises on waste electrical and electronic equipment.
In the European Union, on average, only 55% of e-waste that arises every year is reported as officially collected. 45%, we have no idea what's going on.
Consider your laptop or desktop. If you're getting rid of it, Leroy says it could be a valuable source of palladium. Right now, Russia supplies 40% of the world market, which is a challenge.
And then China, for example, is sitting on 98% of the rare earth elements. They are critical raw materials that you need for many electronics in the value chain.
For countries in Europe, Leroy says the alternative is to switch away from dependence on Russia and China for critical raw materials. It boosts the business case for urban mining, particularly given global supply chain disruption from COVID-19 and the war in Ukraine. I'm the BBC's Ivana Davidovic for Marketplace.
As I mentioned at the top, Memorial Day is the unofficial start of summer, but it also sort of marks the end of the official Broadway season, the first with in-person shows since the pandemic. COVID delayed the start of the season, and casts dealt with outbreaks throughout. But the show did go on, and according to Broadway News, shows grossed more than $33 million in the final week of the season. And in just a couple of weeks, the Tony Awards are coming up. One of the nominees for Best Direction of a Play is Liliana Blaine Cruz. And as Alexandra Starr reports, she's one of several artists of color who are changing Broadway.
Liliana Blaine Cruz likes to go big in her productions. For her Broadway debut at Lincoln Center, she chose The Skin of Our Teeth by Thornton Wilder. It runs 3.5 hours, has 28 actors, and a dinosaur and woolly mammoth. Here's the direction she gave to the designer.
Remember in Jurassic Park when they turned the bend and it was like, da 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 da, and you saw the brontosauruses and everybody was like, yes, dinosaurs. That's what I want.
A lot happens in The Skin of Our Teeth. The Antrobus family goes through the Ice Age, a flood, a war. Rosalind Ruff plays Mrs. Antrobus. Here she is after her family finally returns home.
Too many people have suffered and died for my children for us to start reneging now. So we'll start putting this house to rights.
The play premiered during World War II. Blaine Cruz says it resonates today, particularly with the pandemic.
When I was looking for a play to occupy the enormity of the Beaumont stage, I was like, what is going to access the enormity of that event? What is going to give us some kind of catharsis and collective processing of what we've just experienced as a global community?
Blaine Cruz, who's 38, is of Haitian and Puerto Rican descent. Last year, she became resident director at Lincoln Center. It's home to one of the grandest stages in New York.
When I think about what gets shown there and who gets to occupy that space and ideally who feels welcome inside of that, that feels really powerful to me.
Blaine Cruz is bringing more diverse artists along with her to Lincoln Center. The Skin of Our Teeth has an almost all-Black cast, including actor Rosalind Ruff.
I've certainly done supporting, I've understudied, but this is the first time somebody invited me to have this kind of showcase.
In her position, Blaine Cruz will direct a play at Lincoln Center every year. She will also help decide what other productions end up on the center's stages. Rob Winter Kent is the editor-in-chief of American Theater Magazine.
It's one of the most important positions in the American theater that she's got.
That's in part because shows that appear on Broadway are more likely to get picked up by regional theaters. So Blaine Cruz's choices will have national implications. Her rise is part of a cultural change on Broadway. This season, Wenert Kent says there were 12 shows by Black writers, including musicals and revivals, compared to just 15 in the past decade.
So that was in one season, you had almost as much as you'd had in 10 years.
The creators are becoming more diverse, but the audiences still skew older and white.
I think Broadway does have a problem with, you know, the sorts of people who go to it are from a very certain demographic.
The pandemic and a slump in tourism have hurt Broadway ticket sales. And Broadway tickets aren't cheap. They average about $125. Blaine Cruz, though, thinks that over the long run, creating work that reflects a diverse audience will change who goes to shows.
To see yourself is profound. And when we invest in that in a particular way and we invest in the possibility, then people are more likely to invest their money.
As it turns out, visitors to New York soon will be able to see a lot of shows for free at Lincoln Center. As part of its Summer for the City program, there will be dance, music, and theater, mostly outdoors, through mid-August. In New York, I'm Alexandra Starr for Marketplace.
This final note on the way out today, the turmoil in the crypto market isn't taking much of a break for the holiday. Supporters of the algorithmic stablecoin project Terra, which is supposed to be pegged to the dollar, relaunched its collapsed cryptocurrency Luna over the weekend. The old version cost investors about $40 billion when it crashed, and according to CryptoSlate.com, the new Luna, which launched on Saturday, fell 80% in the first day of trading. No economic context today. Our daily production team includes Anais Amin, Andy Corbin, Richard Cunningham, Maria Hollenhorst, Sean McHenry, and Daisy Palacios. I'm Kimberly Adams, and we'll see you tomorrow, everyone. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.